I believe from coaching for over 10 years, going straight on the 18 holer for a 9 year old, for a 30 year old gent is quite overwhelming and has its own issues with trying to navigate that ball around the course.
Yeah.
I really believe that I can nurture people so much better into having a longer golfing career if they started with me in pitch and putt, where I can teach them the etiquette, teach them the rules, teach them the control, the precision. And from there, should they be able to get that ball around low enough, then they should look to go to an 18 holer or a bigger platform of golf, should they want.
Today's guest, Robin Hughes, is someone who I'm really proud to call a friend, a colleague, a teacher, and as someone who I just ultimately hold loads of admiration and respect for. Robin and I met around the summer of 2023 when he, as a PGA golf coach, was leading on behalf of Wales Golf, a community golf instructor training program. I was one of Robin's students, and though I didn't fully realize it at the time, I had found a kindred spirit, someone who had shared values and a shared passion as it relates to golf and people. And as a measure of that, and as you'll hear him talk about in this podcast, having qualified as a PGA Pro in 2015, he was voted PGA Pro of the Year in Wales only 2 years later in 2017. I consider that pretty remarkable, to be honest, to have such an achievement so soon after fully qualifying. And a lot of that success can be put down to the work that he did to grow junior participation in golf at North Wales Golf Club, where this podcast was filmed. If you want to see a glimpse of what is one of the best links courses and one of the most welcoming clubhouses in all of Wales, then head over to our YouTube channel. Use the link in the show notes, because this episode is available in full video over there, but as well as obviously here in audio and all your favorite podcast platforms. You listen to Robin and you just hear the passion in the guy's voice, the sincerity and the authenticity about growing the game of golf and introducing it to young people, introducing it to his two-year-old son. It was around the time that we first met back in 2023 that Robin had acquired the rights to the land at Great Orme Golf, which had for many years in the, and just sitting above the town of Llandudno in North Wales, had been the site of a pitch and putt golf course, which had been entertaining locals since about the 1950s and was much adored in the community and had been a place where many, many generations of golfers had been born. It closed in 2020. It was allowed to really go to rack and ruin, effectively, until Robin stepped in. And I've been tracking his journey over the last 15 months or so. In a few days' time after this episode releases, we will be releasing our latest feature film, episode of Nine is Fine, where we filmed that from Great Orme Golf, the pitch and putt facility that Robin, with his own bare hands, has turned around and turned into something truly breathtaking, folks. Genuinely, I have not experienced anywhere like this, I don't think, in my entire golf life, in golf experience, golf career. The views from Great Orme, which is this limestone headland that sits atop Llandudno, the views from there across the sea are out of this world. The essence of what Robin is building at Great Orme is so pure, it's so genuine, it's so authentic, and is so grounded in health and well-being. It's a community interest company that he's running Great Orme as, and he's truly committed, this guy, to growing the game of golf in a way that I've yet to experience through anyone else. So listen, enough from me. Please listen to this episode in full. There is so much wisdom that you'll learn from Robin that you can apply in your game of golf. And make sure also to head over to YouTube to be subscribed there, to see Nine is Fine at Great Orme, see this beautiful place in all its glory when that episode drops on Friday, the 28th of November. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump in to the conversation. Robin Hughes, welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast. Thanks very much for agreeing to be our guest. We have a Welsh speaker on the podcast, and I've wanted to do this for a while. I need to ask you, how do you say golf yourself healthy in Welsh?
Golf te hunan mwyach.
Golf te hunan mwyach.
Is that something like that? Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay, cool. Brilliant. I'll remember that. Just a quick word of thanks to the team at North Wales Golf Club here for having us in. We're sat in their sports bar part of their clubhouse at the moment, which, as I described to you, is I think is a nice blend of the modern with the traditional. Do you want to say a quick word about this place? Because you've got a lot of connection both historically and in the present day as well.
Yeah, so North Wales Golf Club was where my grandma played, my dad played. I was a junior here. A year after joining another local nine-hole golf course, which is called Bessers of Coed. But yeah, I was brought up playing golf in this facility. Really welcoming place.
What's your very first memory of playing golf?
First memory of playing golf would be with my dad in the house and just mimicking his swing to the point that I actually started golf left-handed because I watched him play.
Because he's a lefty.
No, he's a righty, but when you're watching someone front on, you swing with the same way as they do, as a mirror. So I started playing golf left-handed, and I do believe now if I'd have continued to play left-handed, I would have won a major tournament. But my dad wanted me to switch to right-handed because he had sets and sets of golf clubs that were right-handed that one day he was going to pass them down to me, to which I've still not seen, Dad. Where are they?
Well, speaking of golf clubs, I've brought this club in. I like to do this thing in the podcast called this little segment called the Wellness Wedge. What you've got in your hand there, Robin, is my 60-degree wedge. And let me, before I ask you what your wellness wedge is, I'll give you a backstory as to why that is my wellness wedge. And basically what I mean by it, I believe that first and foremost, one of the things that we can do to improve our and maintain good well-being is to do difficult things, to learn new skills, right? And that 60-degree wedge is arguably, hitting a 60-degree wedge can be a tricky club to hit, right? And so I find that when you pull it off and you execute it to perfection, that sense of achievement that you get from it. But then equally, if you duff it or it's not so good, then there's always something to learn from it. And that always learning is good for your well-being. So I think that's my wellness wedge. If there was a club in your bag that would sort of sum up that along similar lines, what would it be?
When I was brought, before the hybrids came out, it probably was my dad's one iron that I grabbed. You had to hit that off the center back in the day. And if you hit that ball off the middle, that ball flew. But if you didn't hit it off the middle, then you had to go and practice.
So basically that tells you, like, be... that leads me to that. Just before we hit record, I asked you about healthy habits, and you just said one of the best mental habits is to fall in love with getting better.
Every time with golf, it's a long game to be hard on yourself, to have regrets, to look at all the things you've done wrong. Try your best to fall in love with actually getting better. That's not handicap. Could be two putting, it could be a goal, it could be actually getting up and going to play golf, anything to get better.
You just said, you said something about getting stuff wrong there. Like, can you think, what's the biggest thing you've got wrong per se in your life in golf, and what have you learned from that?
Biggest thing I got wrong would likely be being too hard on myself in my teens. A lot of golfers really wish that they had the maturity that they maybe had in their 20s during their adolescence years, because I was so hard on myself with scores or a miss hit or striving perfection all the time. And I'm really looking forward to getting back to playing golf pretty soon with a lot more zen in the mind and more experience from training other people, from training myself mentally as well, and really, really trying to be at ease with myself a bit more. So too much pressure on myself.
You know, what point would you say you realised that? Is that a more recent thing that you realised that you've got a track record of being hard on yourself? Have you always known that?
I definitely realised it when I was playing university golf, but it started to improve then. Because I had to look, why was I being hard on myself? Was it because I expected too much? Maybe I had to change my expectations of what I was doing. A simple thing here, if I've not been practicing my putting for 3 months and I go to a big championship and I three putt the first three greens in a championship, you can't really expect too much more. So it was kind of like that, realigning my expectations to reality. And once you can really get your expectations to where they should be, that are realistic, I feel that you can put a lot less pressure on yourself.
Yeah. I should say at this stage, okay, I'm going to give a plug to my viewers and my listeners that they need to check out the Nine is Fine episode that we recorded at Great Orm, which is a facility that you've built with your own bare hands. I mean, the land was there already, and we'll talk about that more in the course of this conversation, I guess. But it's a must watch, to be honest, because what you and your partner Tanya are doing up there is, I genuinely mean, it's really inspirational stuff. And I'm looking forward to speaking to you about that in a moment. But in terms of your journey through golf, and in particular, before we get to talking about Great Orm, I mean, from what you've told me, roughly around, was it 2015 you turned pro?
2015 I turned pro. 10 years.
A good solid 10 years 10 of coaching.
10 years of coaching, solid. Had to do a bit of coaching before that. 2009, 19 years of age, went over to America, coached over there in an academy. Went back in 2011.
You became pro in 2015, and only 2 years later, you were PGA Wales Pro of the Year.
Yeah, I didn't stop. just taught so much golf in the community,
that's
in schools.
Pretty damn impressive.
It was,
yeah,
so 7 days a week just teaching. Really, it was easy for me because I enjoyed it, so I could just keep teaching. I taught at 3-4 different golf clubs, including this one. I taught in the community. I did so many new to golf beginner schemes, as well as getting the junior section of North West Golf Club from 4 juniors when I arrived from America to over 100 juniors in a couple of years. We had 3 junior teams here, so we had a really good pathway to golf.
Let's unpack that a bit more. Okay. Right. So, yeah. Okay, so 4 juniors to 100 within a 2-year window. Yeah. You're going to have some pros in golf clubs listening or watching to this being like, that's like Mecca state in a way. Because it's, growing a junior section can be challenging for various different reasons. But looking back on that, what were the keys to success? What were the key ingredients to making that happen?
Consistency, number one. We set up a schedule, rain, shine, stick to your schedule. We did not miss junior sessions. If it was raining outside, we used to pull them into this room that you're in right now. And we used to do putting challenges, we used to do quizzes, sport, golf, rules, whatever to keep them fun, like keep it fun. We did golf fitness, we did press-up challenges, we did all sorts. So the juniors loved coming inside doing a rainy day on a Saturday morning, so we were consistent. The second thing that every professional golfer or a coach should understand, you cannot do it all by yourself. I was fortunate enough to have really good volunteers who would come and help me here. We had a really good junior captain. We had a really good now professional, got 2 professional golfers have come through the through that program, and they are teaching themselves now.
I'm just taking a note here, Robin, because I'm in block capitals on my little iPad here saying you can't do it all by yourself.
Number but, 2.
Well, there's a theme that you mentioned up at Great Orm earlier, which we'll talk about again later. But it's interesting, right? Because when I seem to remember, I've lived in Wales now for coming up 5 years, and it was around the time I first moved to Wales. I remember speaking to a guy called Brendan Pyle, who's the CEO of the Golf Foundation.
Yeah.
And he referenced North Wales Golf Club at the time as being a kind of like a gold standard example of where you could look to a club that's managed to kind of rejuvenate their kind of juniors section. One thing that sticks with me that he said to me at the time was, and it ties to that question I asked you around, what were the ingredients to success? He was talking about how to grow a junior section, there needs to be passion there in the coaching faculty.
Yeah.
Some pros might kind of, it might talk a good game with it or whatever kind of thing, but actually some avoid it entirely. Yeah. So would it be fair to assume, I don't think I need to assume this because I know you a bit by now, and I think there is a passion there for like developing the next generation and junior golfers. But like, is that fair? Like, what role has kind of like passion and purpose played then for you in developing junior golfers?
Hugely, echoing what you say with junior golf, whether they want to play golf for the first time, whether they want to face the demons of playing a tournament, all these things that I feel that I was able to pass on to these juniors and what they had to experience by themselves are skills that they need to go to university, to get their first job, to get an interview, to maybe have a career in golf and management, teaching. And it's so cool to see students that I haven't even seen for 5-6 years come up to me. Hiya, Robin, I'm doing this now. I'm playing football, or I'm a personal trainer, or whatever it may be. And I do wonder if did these sessions that we have inspire them to really try and go for something? Not necessarily golf, but anything really to try and motivate young children.
I met you, Robin, probably, when was that, the community golf instructor training program?
It must have been, was it September 2024?
2024, yeah. Yes, I think it probably would have been.
Or around that summer.
Yeah. It probably was, because I was on a sabbatical from my corporate job at the time, and it was towards the tail end of that. And I guess, you know, I've briefly mentioned purpose and everyone having a why for what they do. And so my why for enrolling in that community golf instructor program was, first and foremost, passionate about golf. Obviously, before I've started a brand called Golf Yourself Healthy, have a belief in the transformative ability of golf on people's health and well-being. But I also had the fire in my belly that had been generated by the loss of my son, and thinking I want to, you know, I would wish that he would have lived to play golf and experience golf. And so one way that I can give golf to other people is by developing that skill set. And I'd like to effectively say thank you to you for putting yourself forward to actually lead that training, because had you not, then we wouldn't have met for a start. But I think I really appreciate how I've been able to meet kind of role model people like you along the way, and I sincerely mean that. This is a good time to bring in Great Orm here. So just, again, tell the viewer and the listener, like, they will, by the way, you have to. If you haven't been sold on it already, guys, you have to go and watch this Nine is Fine episode and see. I want everyone out there to experience Great Orm, by the way, because it's
amazing.
Words I don't think can put across just how special and unique that place is. But give a snapshot to the viewer and the listener, like, what's Great Orm Golf?
Great Orm Golf is 3 weeks we've reopened, we're restored. It's actually been there since the 1950s as a pitch and putt. We walked through it 15 months ago and it was like a jungle. Nothing there, no sheds, there was no holes, it was just grass over your hips.
Because Great Orm at itself is what? Is it like a, is that like a cliff, or is it like, it's like almost, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was the word Orm came from, it was the Vikings who sailed in, or the Nordic, no, it was from Nordic language. It was Nordic. They sailed in, they saw this big shadow that they thought was a sea serpent, and they returned the sail. And the next day they came there and actually realized it was a big rock. And Ormo came from that old Nordic language. And in Welsh, we call it Gogarth. And magical place. They've been mining there sort of 4,000 years ago. They were mining for copper. And that's what spearheaded the Bronze Age. It was the biggest mine in the world.
Up there at Great Orm.
That's right.
No way. Do you want to tell the story of like the logo?
Yeah, so we've got the Celtic Triskelion as our logo. So we designed our own logo. And big thing for me was why I created this pitch and putt, my family, this three of us, myself, Tani, and my two-year-old son, Yago. And the Triskelion has three spirals, so I see that as each spiral representing one of us. The three continues into every hole, and the pitch and putt is a par three. And when you're on the Great Orm, you're quite high up, and you can look up to the sky, you can look down at the land, and you can look at the sea. Three things that the Celtics believed that were really special and sacred. So that's my interpretation of it, and that was my inspiration for the logo, which you saw today, we've got it on the flags and we can't wait to get it everywhere around.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a spectacular place. There's no other word for it. What are your hopes and dreams for it?
Firstly, we've opened, so I'm so happy that we've opened. I'm now going to work as hard as I can this winter to make this a really special place for everyone to come to in the years to come. But I really believe this can be the leading pitch and putt in the UK. I really, really believe people can have such a good time coming over here, whether you like golf, whether you want a hot drink, which we'll be doing in the future, anything. We really are looking to have a really special place.
So you were telling me earlier as well that part of the many different ways in which you're kind of trying to grow it and the passion behind it is pathways, right? So you were saying that we are here today at North Wales Golf Club, using Great Orm as effectively like a platform to introduce people to the game, teach them etiquette, graduate them up. Do you want to say a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I believe from coaching for over 10 years, going straight on the 18-holer for a 9-year-old, for a 30-year-old gent is quite overwhelming and has its own issues with trying to navigate that ball around the course.
Yeah.
I really believe that I can nurture people so much better into having a longer golfing career if they started with me in pitch and putt, where I can teach them the etiquette, teach them the rules, teach them the control, the precision. And from there, should they be able to get that ball around low enough, then they should look to go to an 18-holer or a bigger platform of golf should they want to.
Yeah, yeah. So this next thing I'm going to ask you, right? You know, again, before we hit record, you and I were kind of setting the world to rights and talking about how we've got seemingly this shared trait of having an absolute cluster, never-ending stream of all these amazing ideas and like, you know, how are we going to find time to do all of it, and our partners and wives, whatever, being like trying to rein us back in for the sake probably of our sanity, their sanity and our sanity and our health and well-being. I was saying to you earlier that there's this paradox, right? Taking Great Orm as an example, and also hearing you talk a few minutes ago about growing a junior section from nothing to 100 effectively in the space of 2 years. And part of that was about going all in and trying to do what you're doing now, which is grow a golf health and well-being business, yet actually essentially putting your own health and well-being under strain. How have you found that?
It was hard. Didn't realize it at the time. Now that the clocks have gone back now, so I'm unable to work until midnight. So that kind of helps me maybe reflect on what I was doing. But at the time, I didn't even think it was crazy, just laboring for 12 hours straight, having a family, bruised, bleeding, not eating enough food, not drinking enough water during however many heat waves we had this year. It was really tough, but I knew what the answers was. You drink, you rest, you recover, you do all these things, but I just did not listen to myself. I just kept pickaxing, or I was so, so focused on getting this place open. That's all I wanted to do, was open the Great Orm Golf. I truly had that vision in my head, and I wanted other people to see what I could see in my head. I had no problem sleeping every night. I'd go back to bed and I'd just picture what the golf course was going to look like, and I'd start on hole one. But I soon realized I wasn't getting past hole three because I was already asleep by the time I got to hole three. So then I used to start on hole nine and then go in reverse order. So that's how I pictured every kind of blade of grass of that golf course to redesign it and create. It's been really special.
You know, there's again, I think something, if folks watching, listening, go and check out that Nine's Fine episode we did at Great Orm. There's like just the setting around it. You've got like the tram that operates just up the hill from it, kind of thing. And like, you know, you and I were standing up at the top of that hill whilst producer Lewis, who's here now behind the camera, was up there sort of like filming that. And I just, that view, to look back at Great Orm Golf, you know, I felt proud for you. I was like, imagine, like, you know, it's incredible just to look back and see what you've created.
Yeah, it'll never be the same again. Yeah. It's been changed.
For as much as you're passionate about Iago, your son's development, introduction to golf, wanting him to love it, and, you know, you started trying to coach him and he had a bit of an allergic reaction to it,
as a coach and not a parent, it's so easy to say to parents, don't overcoach your child, leave your child to just find their own way in the sport. And that's how I coach. And I truly do believe in those traits. Let kids self-discover and learn, and you guide them rather than telling them what to do.
Yeah.
However, it was easier said than done, because last Christmas, I was standing behind him, a two-year-old missed five shots in a row, which is, he's 2 years of age. I all of a sudden get my alignment sticks out and I'm there, coaching hat on, dad's hat's been thrown out of the driving range. 2-3 minutes into it, he just said, "Stop, Dad." And I couldn't believe that I just became what I thought I never would be within minutes. And it's so easy to go into that kind of, I know what's best for my child, I know he needs to swing it this way or whatever. Mm. Anyway, I took a step back, watched him, bit my tongue. He discovered it himself, and I still to this day now, if he wants to hit golf shots, great. I let him do whatever he wants with it. If he wants to stop doing after 2 minutes, that's fine as well. But as he gets older, I'll be there to guide him. I'll be there to create games for him. It'd be really cool for myself, Tanya, and him to actually have a round of golf together, whether it's just catching up as a family. Hopefully they're not all too competitive and we get on at the end. But yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, really, really looking forward to the future of family golf.
Yeah, there was, if you noticed earlier when I was kind of interviewing you and Tanya up there for the Nine's Fine video, I put a question across to Tanya, which was, do you believe that, so in Tanya's case, she's not someone that comes at this from a golf background. She's quite new to, like, you know,
yeah.
I said, like, is that, do you believe, Tanya, an advantage to you or a disadvantage? And that was a bit of a trick or loaded question, only because I'm of the belief that actually for the game of golf to progress, you need people coming at it with fresh pairs of eyes. So what's your take on that?
Yeah, for me, I would definitely, with running what we're running out now as a community interest company, my background's very sport orientated, coaching, golf, outdoors. So it's so nice to have Tanya's perspective that isn't the same as me. When she sees something, she sees it differently to me. So as together we collaborate our ideas, we come up with a better idea, because I don't want to surround myself with five people exactly the same as me, because we'd have, or you and I, Chris, we'd have 100 business ideas by the end of this podcast.
Yeah, we're probably getting there. There's probably a few going. In fact, the minute we stop recording, I'm sure we'll have a conversation about the ones that have emerged in our minds while we've been talking, but yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, she's good. Very good and very grateful.
Brilliant. Can you tell that story you were telling me earlier to my viewers about, you know, you've kind of seen a few people turn up at Great Orm and they kind of moan or have a few gripes, and then by the end of it, they're telling a different story.
Yeah, we're based on a house site. We're up on a big rock. They drive up. Yesterday was particularly windy. There was a grandparents who came there, and I really didn't believe that they were going to have a nice time. And I passed them the clubs, and the body language wasn't quite there. I left them to it. An hour later, they came up to me, and I thought, oh, is this what's happened? Or is something happened out there? And all they said to me is, do you mind if we go and play hole one again? I go, yeah, of course. Why? Because we've got a playoff. The children are really enjoying it. We're all really enjoying this game of golf. And that was so much to me. They're playing a course that I've designed, and they were just full of compliments, and it was really cool.
Yeah, that's brilliant. What would your advice be to an aspiring golf coach now? Because something I hear talked about in golf coaching circles is how, let's say for instance, if you do your, I think it's typically like a 3-year process, at least for PGA now,
yeah,
to get your degree and then to go and be a trainee, right? But you kind of come out of the qualification still quite green in terms of, like, you know, you've got the piece of paper that says that you're a golf coach now, but you still need to go and earn the on-the-job experience, if you will. So, like, to someone who finds himself in that situation now, what would your advice be to them?
Yeah, so it's like driving a car, isn't it? You get your driver's license, yeah, and then you really learn when you're actually coaching people, because you're coaching people. You're not coaching, let's say, robots or data. These are real people with real feelings and they have their own expectations. I will draw a parallel to what I would say as a player as well. Always try and improve daily, fall in love with getting better. That could be falling in love with making people happy. How can you make this person happy in a golf lesson? They want to do well. Am I there to make them worse? No. Am I there to make them better and enjoy their golf? That's my main point. So really try and figure out of those points, as opposed to maybe some knowledge that you think that you should give that person. Because quite simply, Chris, it could be as simple as telling a person to just aim up the left, let it rip, have a great time. If you really can't practice to get rid of your slice, don't try and do this move. I can make you shoot 85 gross, no problem. We're going to slice it off the tee and we're going to turn you into Seve Ballesteros around the green. We can both do that, right? Cool. Let's leave it like that. So it's really fall in love with getting better and getting to know your students.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Do you know, it's funny you mentioned Seve there, right? So I was listening to a podcast the other week. You know how like Seve Ballesteros gets talked about in such like godlike terms and whatever, but what people often forget is that like off the tee, he sprayed it around quite a bit, but actually where he's known for being a maestro was like the short game and the sort of, is that your understanding of Seve as well?
Completely, like,
yeah. And so what, to me, what's so cool about that story is how, and it goes to something I was talking to you about at Great Orme, was like knowing where your strengths are. And as one of my best friends, Andy Thomas, who listens to this podcast a lot, once said to me, he's like a really good golfer, he's like, there are no pictures on a scorecard in relation to the, you know, do you know what I mean?
So completely, it's like, yeah. Because if you're competing all the time, let's say against Andy, you'll soon forget about the way that your swing looks if you were just playing head to head every day.
Yeah.
Or you were playing, I don't know, if you were playing tennis or ping pong. I don't know what I look like playing ping pong, but I'll play it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that self-image can really get in the way of actual good performance, I believe.
Yeah, totally, right. Cause I love that self-image. It's like, okay, so what? How do you see yourself as a golfer? And your intention just to go out there and play casually and enjoy it and play with your mates? Or, for example, is it that, or is your intention to be competitive? And like, so that's the yardstick by which you should almost judge yourself, because then if your intention's this, but then you're actually being really hard on yourself, which actually doesn't link back to the thing that you're trying to get out of golf, well, you're always going to be on a downer about yourself.
Completely, and that's 80% maybe of my students or people who've come for lessons first. So you're having to manage expectations.
Yes.
Create new goals. Talk to each other. What is actually possible? You're shooting 110 gross.
Yeah.
Are we going to shoot 73 gross next week? Likelihood not.
Yeah.
Can I get that down to under 100 gross? Yeah, we can do that. What does it require? And then you create a plan with each other. And that's... it's a game, guys and girls. It really is a game that's been made so difficult. I really believe it's a game of just getting the ball into the hole. It's direction, it's distance. Control those two things and you'll do well. Mm. Okay, it's an assault course out there. You've got to navigate around it and enjoy it. Really get that ball around and enjoy it.
Let's talk for a minute about goals, right? Goal setting. You've said a few things. You've, in passing to me today, said stuff about goals, and I want to ask you about it because, like, for example, I've told you that I'm now putting myself out there as what I'm calling a golf health coach. So, and in my health coaching qualification, helping your clients achieve their goals runs central to everything that, and I think that's, by the way, not just unique to health coaching, golf health coaching, business coaching, like goal setting, right? So, have you got any approach to that you use with golf coaching clients?
Yeah, it's healthy to have a goal because it gives someone a reason to kind of continue with a focus of what they're trying to achieve. So the goals could easily be, the typical ones are always handicap and results, but really try and get goals of fitness or goals of putting or chipping or whatever it may be. I truly believe when you set goals to yourself, it will help you get that ultimate kind of result. happiness and performance.
Why is that, do you think?
Because if, so for me, for instance, I'll just throw it out there. I'd love to be, I've got a pitch and putt course. I've got a knee operation coming. So the likelihood is a goal of winning the US Open, not realistic. Mm. However, a goal of becoming the world's best pitch and putt player, I'll wake up to that and I'll think, okay, now how do I get there? Then I've got to pick up loads of other goals of how I become the world's best pitch and putt player.
Right, yeah.
So then I have a lot of smaller goals within that big kind of outcome goal.
Sure.
To how to get there. So for me, it would be, well, I only need to train 40 to 100 yards off the tee. So I need my swing lengths.
Yeah.
I can work on that. Can I repeat that same swing over and over and over for 40 and so on?
Yeah.
Have I got the high chip? Have I got the low chip? And so on. And I'm like, okay, I can transfer from the 18-hole grass golf into this kind of game with one club and just a putter. So I have goals that I'm planning now in my head. I've got a little bit more to do to finish off the pitch and putt. And when that's taken care of itself, I'll be playing it daily, Chris.
That's amazing. Brilliant. Big goal, break it down into smaller goals as a pathway to get to the bigger goal.
Completely.
Because, you know, like you can know with confidence then that you... ticking off those smaller goals builds the confidence that leads to the bigger goal.
Completely.
So there's always a positive sense of accomplishment on the journey.
And it's goals as simple as, okay, an outcome goal. Yes, you want to be the world's best pitch and putt player. I'm starting from the bottom of the pile now. Okay, so first, compete against everyone else in the area.
Yeah.
Let's train hard against, there's so many good people, amateurs who are, maybe wouldn't be able to play a pro game, but they could be very high level in pitching.
Yeah.
And if you don't come out on top there, then you keep working. And then I'd love to see, okay, once you get used to maybe stepping up a level there, then you compete against maybe the people who are playing pitch and putt all the time.
Yeah.
Internationally, they have a World Cup for it. Not much media coverage on it yet. So I feel like there's a lot of upside to pitch and putt as a sport, because most people can actually relate to pitch and putt, because most people can actually hit the ball 100 yards. So a 100 meter race, everyone's like, wow, Usain Bolt is so fast, because I ran 100 meters and I was never as fast as that. But then to talk about maybe hitting a drive 300, 400 yards, not many people can relate to maybe an 18-hole golf course, how far it actually is and how good you actually have to be to be the best in that. But a pitch and putt, people, anyone can play it. Everyone can reach the green near enough. And yeah.
It's such a skill-driven game, that though, isn't it? I really love that point, because, yeah, I was having a conversation. Her name's Linda Sagerstam. So she does Pilates for golf, right? And she was saying that a while back she worked on the Legends Tour, the Seniors Tour. And we were both effectively agreeing that, like, players of that era, like your Bernard Langers, your Colin Montgomerys and people like that, they, in the men's game especially, could well be the last era of relatable golfers, in so much that, like, these guys, by modern standards, aren't ripping it 300 plus yards. So there's finesse and tempo to their swing.
Yeah.
And what my point is, like, as the gap grows, arguably, between tour players and the everyday player, the leveler, as we've talked today as well, still comes at that pitch and putt level. It's like there's something there about skill and mastery, because there's this argument that, like, I'm not sure I fully buy into it. I don't know what your view is, that, like, skill is going out of the pro game, because, like, there's all that, again, going back to Seve, what people loved about Seve was he was a shot maker and, like, bending shots and, like, trickery and stuff, and that's, it's all about bomb and gouge these days. But the thing about pitch and putt is, like, it is about finesse. It's about, like, skill and technical mastery.
Yeah, completely. It's really, really big precision game. It has, I'd argue, 9 holes of pitch and putt has higher dopamine levels than an 18-hole golf course, because of the duration you're playing it.
Yes, yes.
And each shot, if it's par 27 and each shot is worth a shot, it has a higher level of importance. This is talking, maybe if we're talking competitively now, because we talk about, I've been looking at my golf course now and I'm thinking, which is harder to do? Like, is it break 60 in golf, or is it going around a pitch and putt course in breaking 20 without having par fives. They're both super difficult, right? But to do it in such a short time, you've got 9 tee shots, right? Like a 9 darter in darts. Who can keep that streak going? Are going 2 all the way around. 18 shots on 9 holes is the ultimate goal.
That's brilliant because it's quite funny. Like we caught it on camera earlier. I think it was the 9th hole where like I knocked it off the tee, probably knocked it to within like 4 or 5 feet or something. And you were down there rolling one of the greens and you're like, yes. And then I pulled the putt left and missed it. Do you know?
Imagine the streak. Imagine you've birdied every single hole and then only to let it go on that one.
Yeah.
To continue the momentum of keep going with birdies. Yeah. All the way around, it's mentally amazing for whoever's going to do it. I can't wait for it to see it happen.
No, totally. But what you said there was something about how the dopamine hit is it's so interesting, right? Because you compare pitch and putt at your place, Great Orm, and then like with a full length 18 hole course. In part of me was thinking like actually because of in that example of me on the 9th hole, a big high, I've hit a perfect tee shot, a big low because I've just missed the birdie. The great thing about that format is the opportunity to correct course and have the high again comes quicker than it does on an 18-hole course. Because where do you get the highs from on an 18-hole course? Probably birdies again, but it takes longer. Do you get what I mean? Because like
longer,
the distance.
Yes, it's just longer in between shots. It's like a crunching tackle in rugby. Yeah. It's happened there and then, right? Golf has that separation of the shot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, it does feel more fast-paced. Maybe it felt more fast-paced playing today. I played with a pro the other night and we played one round and we were like, should we go again? Mm. Played another round, should we go again?
Yeah.
And then we're becoming kids again. We're playing. We're enjoying it.
Yeah. You said something to me earlier, which I loved as well, which is almost like about how we as adults need to find the child within us again.
Correct.
We forget very quickly how to have fun. We take ourselves too seriously, and I think that's what Great Orm does. I think it and also it kind of, I can see how or why that's where, you know how we always talk in golf about how you get the bug quicker
with pitch and putt. Completely. Kids get to play, adult get to play again, everyone's playing, and you get addicted to the game because you're playing golf. You're playing golf that you can complete the 9 holes in a realistic time. You can celebrate a birdie and a par. You don't have to go out and, like I've said before many times, 14, 15 shots when I was young on some of the holes when it's 30 mile an hour wind and you're 80 years of age playing full size courses. Difficult.
Yeah, definitely. Robin, where can my viewers and listeners find you online if they want to follow you or get in touch with you?
Amazing. So we have Instagram and Facebook on Great Orm Golf, one word, and our website is greatormgolf.cymru, C-Y-M-R-U. Cymru is, do we know what that is?
I do, not everyone else will.
Well, it's Wales in Welsh.
Brilliant. There we are. Remind us how we say golf yourself healthy in Welsh.
Golf your mwyach. Yeah, that way you can say golf your dehyn mwyach.
Fantastic. I might just have to redo the intro to this podcast in Welsh and sort of... anyway, listen, thanks so much. I can't wait to come back to North Wales golf and to Great Orm golf and see it again as it just continues its own development journey. So
I really appreciate having you over for the day, Chris. Thank you very much.
Nice one. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Good lad.
Thank you.
Brilliant.